The Versatime. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump will visit the U.S. Caribbean territory of Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands next week. Still reeling under the effects of devastating hurricanes Irma and Maria and amid complaints of a slow U.S. disaster response, Mr. Trump defended that response.
A massive effort is underway, and we have been really treated very, very nicely by the governor and by everybody else. They know how hard we're working and what a good job we're doing.
Shortages of food, drinking water, fuel, and electricity persist a week after Puerto Rico took a direct hit from Maria, the fiercest of Atlantic storms. Puerto Rico's Governor Ricardo Rossello sought to play down complaints of a slow reaction by Washington.
We are grateful for the attention that the president himself has pledged on Puerto Rico. I really have been somewhat absent of social media, so I can only speak to what he has personally said to me, and I can guarantee to everybody that's listening, the president has called, has pledged his support.
Nearly all of Puerto Rico's infrastructure was destroyed or heavily damaged by Maria. The federal government has increased emergency funding. Thousands of emergency workers are on the ground. Thousands more U.S. troops are en route. João Lourenço has been sworn in as president of Angola, giving the oil-rich African nation its first leader in nearly 40 years, replacing outgoing José Eduardo dos Santos, who at 75 and rumored to be in ill health, decided not to run for re-election. The main opposition, UNITA, and its allies boycotted the inaugural ceremony. The parties unsuccessfully challenged the results of the August general election. With an economy hurt by falling oil prices, Mr. Lourenço has vowed to tackle inequality and corruption. This is VOA News. Iraqi Kurdish leader Masoud Barzani Tuesday claimed victory in a referendum for independence, calling for a dialogue with Iraqi authorities in Baghdad, who rejected the vote as unconstitutional. Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi has threatened to ban all flights into and out of the Kurdish region if leaders there don't concede control of airports to federal authorities. The referendum vote is non-binding, but Mr. Barzani said he hopes the yes vote will lead to an increased dialogue on secession. Saudi King Salman Tuesday ordered women to be allowed to drive vehicles, the royal decree directing the formation of a ministerial body to give advice and implement the order by next June. Ali Shahabi is executive director of the Arabia Foundation in Washington.
This has been hanging over the country for decades. It was a sort of a conservative habit that the religious establishment held on to and resisted, and so as a sort of symbol of upholding tradition.
Saudi ambassador to Washington, Prince Khalid bin Salman, said Tuesday this was a historic and big day for the Saudi kingdom. The UN Tuesday said nearly 500,000 Rohingya Muslims had now fled in violence in Myanmar's restive western Rakhine state to Bangladesh, and that, said Jens Lerke of the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, outpaces international efforts to respond.
The scale of the emergency has surpassed the initial projections. Humanitarian partners are now revising the response plan to account for additional needs and expect that funding requirements for the next 6 months could rise to some $200 million.
Some 45,000 Rohingya Muslims have reportedly crossed the border area in the past 48 hours. French President Emmanuel Macron Tuesday, in a two-hour speech, offered his vision of a reformed European Union, calling for closer cooperation on defense and immigration, including a common budget for Eurozone members.
L'Europe que nous connaissons est trop faible.
Speaking nearly 2 hours at the Sorbonne Tuesday, Mr. Macron said the Europe we know is too weak, too slow, and too inefficient. But he said only Europe can give us the capacity to act in the world in the face of great challenges to defend our values and interests. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson heads to China this week, and North Korea is expected to be high on the agenda. While holding out hope for a diplomatic solution to the North's nuclear and missile threat, President Donald Trump Tuesday warned the military option remains.
We are totally prepared for the second option, not a preferred option. But if we take that option, it will be devastating, I can tell you that, devastating for North Korea. That's called the military option. If we have to take it, we will.
The Trump administration announced it's ramping up economic pressure on Pyongyang with sanctions on 8 North Korean banks and more than 24 individuals. A Zimbabwean court has ordered jailed pastor Evan Mawarire, a critic of President Robert Mugabe, freed. A judge ruled police failed to bring him to court within 48 hours of his arrest. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatiah in Washington. Today is Wednesday, September 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. George Weah's party explains his absence from yesterday's second and final Liberia presidential debate.
Ambassador Weah could not attend a debate, unfortunately, for which we have prepared ourselves due to a visit overseas that he had to attend to. There was a request to visit certain institutions and certain people.
Professor Wilson Tappe is National Campaign Manager for George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change. Some Liberians say they are disappointed in the boycotting candidates. Kenya's leading opposition urges members of the Electoral Commission to step down before the October 26th runoff election. And an exiled Rwandan tycoon reacts to the government's decision to auction off his seized property.
When I compare losing 20 million and the people who are losing their life, I feel I am lucky because life has more value than the 20 million.
That's Rwandan businessman, Tribert Rujugiro Ayabatwa. What will today bring in Uganda's parliament following a chaotic proceeding yesterday during an age limit debate? A South Sudanese judge sues President Salva Kiir in the East African Court of Justice. And the U.S. pledges millions of dollars in humanitarian aid for Africa. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia had its second and final presidential debate for the October 10th elections on Tuesday, but without four of the six leading candidates, Vice President Joseph Boakai of the ruling Unity Party, Senator George Weah of the Coalition for Democratic Change, Charles Bramskin of the Liberty Party, and businessman Benonai Yure were all a no-show. The only participants were former Coca-Cola executive Alexander Cummings, former National Bank of Liberia governor Jamil Jones, and the only female candidate, Magdela Cooper. Senator Weah had also skipped the first debate, and it has been suggested that he could not articulate his campaign platform. Professor Wilson Tappet is the National Campaign Manager for Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change. He says Senator Weah isn't afraid of debates, but he could not participate in Tuesday's debate due to overseas engagements.
Ambassador Weah could not attend the debate, unfortunately, for which we have prepared ourselves due to a visit overseas that he had to attend to. There was a request to visit certain institutions and certain people that we got confirmation late on the weekend. So he had to leave town very early Sunday morning.
So what event did Ambassador Weah had to attend that prevented him from participating in the debate? Where did he go?
Well, we did not get full details, but I believe the visit had to do with some regional head of states and then some colleagues in Europe. You might have seen on the net that there was a meeting he had with the Nigerian head of state.
Professor Tappe, Ambassador Weah did not participate in the first debate and now the second. What do you say to people who say that he is afraid to debate for fear of making an error?
I can understand where those people will be coming from, but I want to remind them that in 2005, Ambassador Weah attended a debate. So what is there to be afraid of? But I can say this. Arrangements have been made before this campaign is over for Mr. Weah to appear on radio and address the various issues that are attending to this campaign, including specifically continuation in the discussion of the manifesto of the Coalition for Democratic Change. So it's not a matter of being afraid. No, there's nothing to be afraid of. Ambassador Weah is strong enough to speak to the masses of our people. He has been doing that all over the country.
So talk to me, Professor Tappe. Now, how is the campaign, at least less than a month now, to go before the election day? How is the campaign going?
It's very challenging, but every day new inroads are made. The campaign left from here last week to go to Central Liberia, specifically Bourne County, Lofa County, and Nimba County. And what we thought would have been a difficult terrain to go to and to talk to people, because we have been told by opponents who went around that part of the country that those counties were locked up. We approached each of the towns in those three counties, and the people came out in droves, in mass, in thousands. Everybody came out because we had a proper message to ensure that this country improved, and the change that we are offering the people is the viable change that they desire. So it was good, very, very good. The results far more beyond our own expectations.
I read an article in the Daily Observer newspaper of Liberia where Senator Prince Johnson is saying that he thinks that if Ambassador George Weah is elected president, there might be war in Liberia. Apparently, he was referring to an incident that took place in Nimba County between the supporters of the Coalition for Democratic Change and the Liberty Party.
Ambassador Weah has been a very peaceful person. This is the man who served as peace ambassador for the United Nations for a number of years, a man who brought peace to this country when people were killing people in this country. Ambassador Weah was one of the very few persons who used his standing in the world to focus the international attention on this country. So for Senator Johnson to make such a comment is unfortunate, but that's Senator Johnson.
Professor Wilson Tapper is the National Campaign Manager for Senator George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The Liberian National Presidential Debate was organized by the Deepening Democracy Coalition, a group of six civil society organizations. Lami Bogoy, a member of the debate organizing group, says his group is baffled by the absence of the four leading candidates.
I don't know the reason why at least two of them did not show up. Because the UP yesterday, after giving them a one-month notice for this program, they just yesterday informed me that they were not going to be coming because they had campaign activities in Grand Cape Mount County, which is just right next door to Monrovia. The Congress for Democratic Change did not say why they didn't show up. The Liberty Party also did not give us any reason why they didn't show up. It's quite disappointing that candidates of that stature who did not show up, especially without giving reasons. It created a condition. The fact that they were absent and this debate was broadcast across the country, so hundreds of thousands of Liberians were listening to it. It robbed those Liberians of the opportunity to once more listen to Vice President Boakai and Councillor Bromsky, and further robbed them the opportunity of listening for the first time to Mr. Weah. But the decision is with the Liberian people to decide whether they have heard enough from everybody to make a decision around who will be the next president.
They are the three leading candidates in these elections, and they miss out. Is it a minus for them?
That should be a judgment that a general population will make. The voters will vote on that in about 2 weeks' time. Two of them have had the opportunity to appear at these debates and speak to the Liberian people. We are hoping that they will come back today and speak further on other issues. They did not show up. So the electorates will make the decision around this particular issue.
Lamine Bogoy is a member of the Deepening Democracy Coalition, the group that is organizing Tuesday's presidential debate in Liberia. He was speaking with Moses Gaziewu from the capital, Monrovia. Meanwhile, some Liberians say they are disappointed in some of the key candidates who chose to boycott Tuesday's second and final presidential debate.
I mean, we are disappointed that it didn't turn up again. And I think you have to take it in the entire context. And that is not necessarily because they didn't want to be here. We would have liked for them to be here. The Liberian people would have liked to have heard what they had to say. So it's up to the Liberian people to decide how much weight they're going to give the absence of the candidates at a debate.
People who should have been here to talk to the people about their manifesto didn't show up today. If I was supporting any of them, I would have changed my decision, because I think what it is a gross disrespect to Liberian people, and I should not do that with no genuine excuse given whatsoever, and just leaving it as open as that. I think it's not good for our democracy.
Particularly, I run a program for first-time voters, young women, and we try to have some of them attend the debate for the very first time in their life, or encourage a pool of young women voting for the first time in their life, and there are candidates that did not show up, and probably they will not get to hear from face or see face to face, talk to them about the issues that they are concerned about. The expression on their faces is like, why this other candidate did not come, why can the X did not show up? I don't have the answer for them, but I see disappointment in that direction from them.
Coming to our debate has a first time for us. I thought that I could, like say, see them so that they can tell me what they want to do for the country, but unfortunately, I didn't see them. It was so bad.
You are disappointed.
Very much disappointed.
The views of some of the Liberians who attended yesterday's second and final presidential debate. Today's Wednesday, September 27th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour, Kenya's opposition took to the streets outside the country's electoral board on Tuesday to demand new officials to organize the October 26 presidential election rerun. The opposition says it will boycott the poll if the personnel changes do not occur, but the ruling party has rejected the threats. Viewer's Jill Craig has more from Nairobi.
The sounds of police firing tear gas and protesters in retreat filled the air outside Kenya's Electoral Commission Tuesday, as demonstrators attempted in several waves to get close to the building before police dispersed them. Opposition leader Raila Odinga has called for regular protests in order to pressure the Electoral Commission, or IEBC, officials to resign, including CEO Ezra Chiloba. Chiloba has refused.
IEBC cannot begin the process of ensuring an honest election as long as those responsible for the irregularities and illegalities are still lurking in its corridors. That is why we are today beginning this peaceful campaign to force them out by public pressure so that the process of fair elections can at last begin.
The Supreme Court recently gave its full explanation for why it nullified the August elections. Although it did not hold individuals responsible, the court blamed the commission, who it says refused a court order to open computer servers and to announce official results before all tally forms had been received during August 8th polls. 24-year-old Isaac Mbay is a student at the University of Nairobi, which is located across the street from the IEBC's headquarters. He says he is an opposition supporter, but he is not happy with these calls for protests.
Okay, there's some tear gas everywhere, and I can't manage. And this is political stuff. And as students, we are not happy about it because it's bringing misunderstanding everywhere and intolerance.
Prior to the demonstrations Tuesday, John Mbadi, chairman for Odinga's Orange Democratic Movement Party, announced President Uhuru Kenyatta had withdrawn the security detail for Odinga and his running mate, Kalonzo Musyoka.
We therefore give the states 24 hours to return our leaders' security or face mass action right at their doorstep. This is not negotiable.
Kenya's constitution dictates new polls must be held within 60 days of the ruling. The new date of October 26th falls just 5 days shy of that deadline. The ruling party has remained steadfast that this timeline must be followed and has rejected the idea of changing the commissioners. Many people are just hoping the politicians can sort out their issues before triggering a constitutional crisis. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
There was heavy security deployment in and around Kampala yesterday as the Ugandan parliament resumed business. Members were expected to table motions, some requesting for amendment of the constitution clause that stipulates age limits for a person standing for the presidency. As was the case last week, the controversial issue led the Speaker of Parliament, Rebecca Kadaga, to adjourn parliament to today, Wednesday. Mugumi Davis-Rakarich has details from Kampala.
Legislators opposed the amendment of the constitution, stood and sang the national anthem as soon as Speaker Kadaga announced the Magezi motion as is popularly known. Opposition Member of Parliament Odong Otto says both opposition and some members of the ruling party are ready to ensure that the article in question is not amended.
Where we are, you need to be proactive. For me, even if they cut off my head, I will still try to raise my hands to vote. I've been suspended from this parliament during the lifting of the presidential term limit. So we are not worried. But we only urge Rebecca Kadaga to exercise restraint, because to suspend a member of parliament who has been singing the national anthem, I think that would be outrageous.
Member of parliament Raphael Magezi wants parliament to grant him leave to be able to draft an amendment bill removing the age cap for a person seeking to stand for the presidency. The Ugandan constitution requires a person seeking to stand for the presidency to be 35-75 years of age. Those opposed the amendment say the move is intended to allow President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni through Uganda for life. James Achidili is a member of the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement. He says the issue of ensuring that the age limit cap is not removed from the constitution is cross-cutting for all Ugandans.
It is not about a political party. It's about Uganda as a nation. It's about our children. It's about the future. Great statesmen don't think about the next election. They think about the future.
Earlier on, tempers flared up when one legislator accused Ronald Chibule, the state minister for water, for entering the parliament with a gun.
Order for the safety of the members in this house. I wish to seek your indulgence, right, Honorable Speaker, to ask us get out and get in and they check us. They check us one by one. That's a procedural point, right, Honorable Speaker, that I would like, because even you, right, Honorable Speaker, in that seat where you are, right, Honorable Speaker, you are not safe. You are not safe, right, Honorable Speaker. The members are not safe.
Parliamentarian William Zogu's claim was overruled not so long that the Speaker ordered for each member to be subjected to body search. It remains to be seen how this afternoon's session will be conducted if those opposed to the mention of the motion maintain their stance. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakalinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Exiled Rwandan tycoon, tribal Rujugiro Ayabatwa, says the decision by the Rwandan government to auction off his seized property is illegal and of little consequence. The Rwandan government Monday auctioned off the $20 million Union Trade Center in the capital Kigali. The government says the auction was prompted by the non-payment of taxes. But businessman Ayabatwa says the $20 million he is losing is incomparable to the many Rwandans who are losing their lives under President Paul Kagame's government.
For me, it means nothing because there was no change. It just went from left to right and is still in the hands of those people who says it.
But we are talking of a business worth $20 million. This should mean a lot to you that you're losing your property.
Not really, because when I compare losing $20 million and the people who are losing their lives, I feel I am lucky because life has more value than the $20 million. And there are people who are losing their lives because of the bad government, which does not care about the human rights.
But the government of Rwanda also considers you as an enemy of the government. They say you finance activities meant to destabilize the country.
No, I think considering me an enemy is exaggeration. They should consider that I'm someone who does not have the same view as them. Financing some people who would attack Rwanda, this I said I will never do, because with the genocide, with the million people we lost, no way I will involve myself anything which is going to make people lose their lives. Anything which starts has got an end, and one day this is going to end.
That's exiled Rwandan businessman Tribert Rujugiro Ayabatwa. We're speaking with VOA's Edward Rema. A South Sudan judge is suing President Salva Kiir in the East African Court of Justice over the president's decision to fire more than a dozen judges who went on strike to protest poor working conditions. Judge Jerry Raimondo says he and his colleagues have a constitutional right to seek redress in the courts. Tito Justin has this story from Juba.
Justice Malik Matiang Malik, who worked in South Sudan's Court of Appeals, filed suit to overturn President Kiir's decree firing 14 judges. President Salva Kiir dismissed all 14 in July during a strike to demand better working conditions. The judges also demanded the resignation of Chief Justice Chan Roch Madut, whom they accused of ignoring their problems. Malik says Mr. Kiir's decision to dismiss the judges is unconstitutional.
What I want is that decree be reversed. This decree was not in accordance with the laws of South Sudan. It was not in accordance with the rule of law. And if it is reversed, then it means automatically I'm again a member of the judiciary of South Sudan.
According to Article 134, Subsection 2 of the Transitional Constitution of South Sudan 2011, the Judicial Service Commission is responsible for recommending the dismissal of a judge or justice from the South Sudan's judiciary. Malik says Mr. Kiir's unilateral decision to fire the judges violates the constitution. He says the judges will use legal means to fight for their rights.
The very legal advisors of the president will not accept that decree to be issued again. So the only way out is to having a case against that decree. and this is what I'm doing.
Another dismissed judge, Gary Raimondo, says Mr. Kiir broke the law by firing the striking judges.
It is unconstitutional as well as unlawful, because in Article 134, Clause 2 of our Constitution, Transitional Constitution of the Republic of South Sudan, there are grounds for sacking a judge. It is for gross misconduct or incapacity or incompetent. But we were not faced with all this. We don't know why we are sacked.
Justice Raimondo believes it would be better to file suit in a local court rather than a region of the East African Community, and says he is prepared to file another case in South Sudan if the president refuses to revise his decree or meet the judge's demands.
I've been working in the judiciary for almost more than 27 years. By the way, my petition is ready, but I'm still saving it for good time.
Malik says in case of the rule of law violation, the East African Community Treaty and the rules of East African Court of Justice allows a person to file a case both locally and at the regional level, provided the person is within a member country. The East African Court of Justice confirms that a South Sudanese identified as Justice Malik has filed a case at the regional court. Speaking from Arusha, Tanzania, Boniface Ogoti, a clerk at the East African Court of Justice, says Malik's petition has been delivered to the South Sudan government.
The matter is still in the pleading stage. We are waiting for a written response from the parties.
South Sudan judges called off their four-month-long strike earlier this month to give President Kiir ample time to address their grievances. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
The U.S. pledged hundreds of millions of dollars this month in humanitarian aid for African nations struggling with food insecurity and violence, as well as new programs to fight malaria. The policies announced during the U.N. General Assembly are among the Trump administration's most significant new Africa initiatives. But as Maria Mandiallo reports, some of President Trump's remarks to an audience of African leaders raised eyebrows.
At a luncheon with African leaders on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly, President Donald Trump says he'll send his UN ambassador to Africa to discuss conflict resolution.
We're closely monitoring and deeply disturbed by the ongoing violence in South Sudan and in the Congo. Millions of lives are at risk, and we continue to provide humanitarian assistance.
$575 million is aimed at programs addressing violence and famine in South Sudan, Nigeria, Somalia, and Yemen, says USAID Administrator Mark Green.
It's everything from, again, food distributions to immunizations to make sure that we are dealing with health needs to when we can. Beginning to look at resilience in food production and the local economy.
In the fight against malaria, there are new programs in Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire, Niger, and Sierra Leone. Some of the funding is new money, Green says, but other funds will come from existing programs. African Union Chairman and President of Guinea, Alpha Condé, took advantage of the opportunity of meeting President Trump to make this case.
Africa needs substantial investments for the emergence of a vibrant and resilient private sector, which can contribute to the enormous employment and empowerment needs of women and young people.
Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
And that's it for this Wednesday, September 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We invite you to join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jim Harmon, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very nice day.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it?
We have it on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
All day, all night.